This is Hazel Kahn, and this is North Fork Works, one of WPKN's new programs from the North Fork of Long Island, New York. Today I'll be introducing you to Peggy Ehlers, a woman who spins and knits and designs, who's produced an educational book and a DVD about all the natural fibers of the world, who has a deep relationship to local agriculture, who's a certified wool classer and an arts and education teacher. She's also a graphic designer. I've always shrugged my shoulders when I was told never to talk to strangers. Instead, I've always gone out of my way to talk to them. If I hadn't, I wouldn't be sitting here in Peggy's studio in Riverhead. So Peggy, let's start by you telling me how you came to be interested in wool and knitting. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, Hazel, it started when my daughter was 5, and I thought it would be great for her to learn how to knit. And a local yarn shop was giving some summer classes, and I would take her. And I was pleasantly surprised to see this whole world of yarn and knitting, and I then began to do it too. And so there were a few women that would meet once a week, and they commented that if you learn how to knit, well, you need to learn how to spin. And I've never looked back. It's opened my world to designing my own yarn and also being able to have the ability to find some of the nicest and most rarest fiber of the world. So it's been a great, great experience.
So that's a bit of history, but how did you actually, I mean, what you have now, because I've been in your studio downstairs and sitting up here next to your spinning wheel, you have a brand, you have your own brand. And maybe we'll talk about that and basically how you make a living out of all of this. I mean, how it gets from the sheep, basically, or the goats, to these yarns with labels on them.
Well, of course, it starts out with the farmer, which is really the most important part because he is the shepherd and takes care of all the different types of animals. And then from there are many different parts, the animal husbandry of the animals, the different breeds of the animals, and how their fibers all work together. A lot of people think that all sheep is the same, but it is not. Then the shearer comes in and shears everything, and then from there it goes to the mill. And then there are various ways to spin this yarn commercially. And from there it's then given to the public or to fashion designers. And then they, in turn, create their beautiful industry or you know, handmade garments. My approach to this profession / craft starts for me with the breed of the sheep. That's the most important thing because it has to do with the color, the crimp, the micron, and the staple of these fibers that determine how my creations are designed and how my yarns are absolutely
produced. Your label is actually Nuna Knits. Perhaps you can just talk about what the name means. How is it different from other brands? Where would I find them? And the philosophy behind Nuna Knits, things like farm to fashion or design that begins with a land. That's sort of a different spin than, as it were, that I usually associate with yarns.
Nuna is a Navajo Indian name. And it means of the land. So I'm a designer. So Nuna, meaning of the land. So the tag for the name Nuna is design that begins with the land, because the land is where all animals begin out in the pastures when we talk about sheep. So I thought that would be apropos for what we're doing. So that's how that started. In agriculture, there's this big push for farm to table. And locally grown. Well, the same philosophy I apply to farm to fashion because it is the same outcome. It starts with the farmer, and then the fashion comes from the animals of which these fleeces and fibers come from. So it's the same principles as if it were food. And most of what I do too is the farm to table philosophy educates the consumer about where their food is grown and how it's produced. And my philosophy about garment design and yarn is the same, that if you know where it comes from or how it's made, then the the public will cherish it more, will have more a stewardship for the animals and for the land and the local economy, which is really one of the reasons why I only buy my fibers from farmers here in the Northeast.
I'm a knitter, amateur knitter, but it was surprising to me to connect the wool that I'm using, not only with the animals that it came from, as you've been mentioning, but also to the food that the animal eats and the grass and the, you know, the all of that. That was kind of odd for me to think about. How do you actually see the difference? You this is something you care about when you select a particular farmer or sheep?
Yes, I do. It's the kind of thing where when we talk about different breeds of sheep, it's amazing that some people in the industry say, well, the micron is all that matters and we can, you know, have many different breeds of sheep. They can all be the same micron and we can all lump them together in the same type of yarn. But I did a little experiment last year. I took all the different breeds of sheep that I think are really special and knitted them all together, meaning Corriedale, Dorsets, different kinds of Merinos. And it's amazing that even though they might have the same micron, they absolutely look different, knit different, drape different, and the gauges are different too. So it matters to me what sheep breed it comes from and also how those sheep are taken care of. It matters immensely to me. And it shows in, you know, my pieces, because my yarns don't pill, they don't break down. I'm a big fan of worsted, and how it's spun and how the farmer takes care of his animals is clearly very important.
So you really have a personal relationship with a lot of these farmers. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I know that you've been involved in a very grand sort of global education project. You say you're also a teacher, mm-hmm. arts and education teacher now. Tell us about this book that was produced in 2009, how that, not so much how it came about, but what we have, what you could show me and what it's being used for these days.
In 2009, my son was in third grade here in Riverhead at Roanoke Elementary School. And the principal, Miss Deb Rogers, and I were talking about spinning and yarn, and she was mentioning that in third grade, New York State requires three countries of studies, Mexico, China, and Australia. And since Australia, as we know, is a big wool country, she thought it would be interesting to possibly apply for a grant through New York State Arts and Ed and bring my craft and into the classroom. So we together applied for this grant. It was called an LCB grant. It was for $5,000. And Riverhead schools, for the very first time in 2009, were gifted this opportunity. And it was wonderful. So I wrote a 70-page book for these children. We had drop spindles made in Maine for the children to learn. We had 18th century production wheels for the children to be able to learn how to spin on. And we had electric spinning machines. They learned everything about Australia through the economic engine of sheep and wool. We learned their water supply, their farming, where the rare breeds come from, why the breeds are fine and medium and coarse based on the land that they come from, the industry of sheep and wool, from the veterinarian to the breeder to the wool classer to the marketer, and how it relates to food, how it relates to their economy, their water supply within the country, and how that matters for agriculture and sheep and wool. It was a great thing.
So is that a finished project, or is it going to, I mean, it seems like a lot of work to have just done once. And you said there's a DVD too, I believe. Mm-hmm. So is that something that could be reused one of these days?
I forgot to even say this, but in 2009, as a connection with Australia, the United Nations had launched their 2009 Year of Natural Fibers. So I included that first 17 pages of the book into the grant because I felt it would be interesting for the children to understand the world's consumption of fibers and how that relates to different parts of the world, different countries, different economies, and how it's imported and exported. And also it teaches the children, you know, where does it all come from? Where does their food come from? Where does their fiber come from? So it was just really great. And yes, it is being used. There's another local school here that I'm going to be doing this same grant we'll tailor it differently. It won't be on the country of Australia, but some intrinsic parts of the grant will be taught to these kids.
Sounds like a very, very noble venture, very noble global venture. You're listening to Peggy Ehlers of Riverhead talking to North Fork Works about the many ways she works. This is Hazel Kahn. We haven't really talked about your personal North Fork history. We're sitting in Riverhead, but I know you're not actually born in Riverhead.
I grew up in Greenport, New York. Growing up in Greenport, it was, you know, there are still farms there. So a real rural agricultural sort of background. And we grew up working on farms, working summers, all different kinds of country life. So my mom was from Brooklyn. My dad was a local person from Greenport. And that's kind of my heritage. So agriculture is really been a part of my life forever. And growing up out in Greenport, we had the best of everything. I mean, everything was homegrown, home cooked, fishing, lobstering, clamming. We live off the land in the summertime. It's great. It's very important to me, our food supply and where it comes from and how it keeps us healthy. And I feel the same about the animals also.
This picture that you just presented of really what a wonderful place Greenport was, mm-hmm. maybe still is mm-hmm. in the summer. Self-sufficient and outdoors and everything sustainable and so on. Do you have any particular feelings about the North Fork? I mean, you live in Riverhead and you're right on the Peconic River here. But do you have any special feelings for the North Fork? Is there something then about the North Fork that, you know, we know people come here, they think it's a wonderful place. They say, oh, the light's so great if you're an artist and so on. But beyond that, I was just wondering, somebody who grew up here, anything else you can say about what it means to you and how it's different from other places?
Well, what's really great about living on the North Fork is that it's real. The people are real. The farmland is really beautiful. You know, when I grew up, it was really rural. There weren't a lot of people around. And then over time, with the Hamptons getting so overrun with too many people, the North Fork has this overflow, a lot of people investing, which is a good thing because it's brought a lot of culture here and it's brought a lot of artists here more than maybe when I was younger. What I really love about the North Fork is that you have the country and then you're only 2 hours away from the city. Riverhead's great because it's the regional hub for really the North Fork and the South Fork together. And I really do like living here. The wineries are wonderful. It's got really the best of both worlds. I mean, all the school districts are good. It's got good, clean living. Your children can, you know, ride bicycles downtown if they want to. Everybody knows who you are, which is wonderful. It's a real local atmosphere. All the restaurants serve local food.
What do you think the community, people in the community have in common?
They really want to hold on to their heritage and they really believe in local economies and they want to keep it that way. That's what keeps communities together and people staying invested in one another. It also keeps us in our houses and keeps our business going. So that's what I really like about it. From town to town, you'll see little stores and everyone knows one another. We support one another. And that local economy really is a great thing.
I'm thinking about your brand. I've seen it. I've seen the label. Nuna is a memorable name. So I'm wondering how people buy it from you, how you sell it, how it gets into other people's hands. The same with your wonderful, wonderful sweaters that you make that are for sale. What's the outlet for it? I mean, what do you envisage for the future? Do you envisage a shop with your Cornuna something? I'm just wondering, I don't know anything about this industry. I'm just wondering how you move to the next step and what your personal philosophy would be.
Currently, most of my pieces are one of a kind that are knit to a private clientele. I have had exposure in New York City over the years, I guess about 2 or 3 years ago, and that was very profitable. Most of my pieces are really designed for production prototypes. I mean, they can be made into machine production of any kind. And since my ability to understand fiber and fiber qualities and how things are spun is an added advantage because I'm not only a designer, but I'm also a technician. So I understand how things are, how the fibers all work together, and you know, the different types of spinning and gauges and plies and all the science that goes into spinning. So that would work quite well. I have been working with a really great resource in New York called the Knit Resource Center, and they have been very helpful and supportive in my quest to design my own yarns, but also to work with the fashion industry, because there is a big disconnect with designers understanding the fiber qualities that it takes and the science part of spinning and yarn making for knits that most people don't really pay attention to. I just happen to, because in my current or past profession as a designer, technology and specs on production are very important. So it's the same approach in spinning and designing yarn and hand knits. It's the production end of it, because we all have the gift of being designers, but the production is what brings it to life. So that's how that all worked.
Did you actually get trained in any of this? I mean, did you go to college or to learn any of these kinds of things? No.
No, I didn't. I'm a kind of the kind of personality that if I become interested in it, something, I will not rest until I know everything about it. And since the design part of my ability, I have that gift, but it's the production, because my training in college was all about production. And so it's the same with hand knitting and yarn design. You have to know how to make that. You need to know the production before you can ever design anything. So my approach is the farmer as the breeder, the sheep and how it's taken care of, the breed, the crimp, staple, micron, how that fiber drapes, how, you know, is it soft? Is it itchy? Is it a down fiber? Is it a hair fiber? Is it, you know, what is the memory of it? Is it, what color is it? Is it a natural color? Is it dyed? So all of these things matter. And then from there comes the finished piece, whether it's a hat or a scarf or a sweater, socks, anything. Even woven fabric is the same way.
Production begins at the farm, mm-hmm. and it ends on your knitting needles or on spinning, or mm-hmm. when does production end?
Well, it starts with the farmer, because he's the one that grows it, you know? And then the end result, of course, is in your hand, whether you're a craftsperson or, you know, machine. And those two disciplines are clearly done differently, because in the hand, it's softer than on a machine, because the machine's going to have a lot of oils in the fibers and everything so that they can go through the machinery. But the production, it really doesn't stop until it reaches the store, because then there's the shipping end of it and all that. But as far as the production, whether I hand spin it and then it gets transposed into machine, it's the same. Meaning how I'm spinning it on a spinning wheel is the same as a machine. It's just a different application. So I hope that answers your question.
Peggy Ehlers is talking about her life and her work on the North Fork of Long Island. This is Hazel Kahn. I guess I'd like to know what your plans are. I mean, what if I came back a year from now, we're sitting here, would it be the same kind of conversation? Would you have, you know, new things you want to do? Mm-hmm. And I've asked you this before, but would you like to have your own shop?
Yes, many times I have thought about having my own shop. If I were to have my own situation as far as a shop, it would all include farm to fashion yarns from farmers. That's what I would do. And I'm working towards that with a project that I'm working on now, with developing my own yarns that are being milled now, and also the a few farmers that breed in the Northeast, the finest merino.
So who would be excluded from your shop? You said you'd start with the farmers, which means a lot of people you're going to be leaving out and not representing in your shop.
I believe in the farm to fashion philosophy. You know, there's this big word that is being used now called sustainability, and it's sort of going by way of what happened in the early 80s of the word natural. So sustainability meaning that it's a community of people. And so when we go to sheep and wool festivals such as Rhinebeck and Maryland, and the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival, which is May 1st of every year, that is truly an experience of seeing what these breeders do and how passionate they are about these animals, from showing them to the yarns that they produce. I mean, they're just beautiful. It's like nothing you could ever buy anywhere, because they're really committed and they're gorgeous. They're wonderful in the hand. And there's many breeders that are producing yarn commercially. One in particular out in Oregon, Imperial Stock Ranch. And they are, I think they're running Cogswold sheep out there on 30,000 acres. But there's one wonderful story about an American farmer producing yarn for the American fashion industry, which is a great thing. I mean, the United States is the third largest producer of mohair in the world. We are the global resource for Supima cotton in the world. I mean, it's amazing. And I really never would have known any of these things if I hadn't have written the grant in 2009. It really unleashed an amount of knowledge in me that I really thought I knew a lot about the fiber industry. I had the journey with the grant really gave me an incredible amount of knowledge.
If everything you did would be connected to farmers and farms, then where does the other stuff come from? That if I go to a yarn store, there's all millions of brands and things and so on. You would not include those because somehow they fall outside your philosophy. But I don't know what, just tell me what that is.
In watching a lot of local yarn shops, I see how they only carry the brands, you know, and there's many of them. And a lot of them are great. I mean, they taught me in the very early beginnings. But through my own self-education, I've learned that, and through spinning, really, it's really through hand spinning, it taught me things, you know, like memory and how fibers work together and how cashmere is blended and how nylon is blended into wool and how to do your own blends of silk with wool and camel with wool and different sheep breeds from Dorset to Corriedale. And one of my favorites is Wensleydale. It's from the UK. It's lovely. And how all that works together. So commercially, with the commercial brands, not that there's a disconnect from the farmer, but it looks yummy. And, you know, you get, you know, it's like eye candy. So you're looking at the brands and the colors, but maybe there's sort of needs to be more connection to the breeds. So that local economy and those local farmers is really what I see that all the time. And without that, the bigger yarn companies are working with, you know, bigger mills in China, in India, in Italy. And I would really like to see some of that brought back here to the United States. I mean, there's quite a few mills popping up, you know, just in the Northeast. One of the oldest ones, one of the first ones was Green Mountain up in Putney, Vermont. But now, since that time, there's now, you know, quite a few in upstate New York and also in northern Vermont, and they're doing beautiful yarns.
So does that mean that there's a return somehow to some fashion thing, or is there a return to craftspeople, or is there a return to younger people starting to knit? Or, I mean, it's not just about knitting, I understand, but I'm just wondering what the trends are that this means.
There's a publication that comes out every month. It's called Yarn Market News. It's a free publication. It's great. And it sort of is the bridge between the local yarn shops. And in the past 2 years, the catwalks have been doing editorials in Yarn Market News. So the trend is that the knitting industry is here to stay. But there has been sort of a disconnect between the fashion industry and knitting, you know, as a craft. But really, it's the same, because in the days before, you know, machines, women knitted. They knitted as a business, and they would knit for designers. They would knit for stores. And so, and then as the machine knitting came in, you know, more and more people, the Industrial Revolution changed all of that. But it's coming back, and the yarn companies are now taking the trends in the fashion industry, and then they are applying those trends to knitting yarns. So, which is a good thing. For me, I would like to see the farm to fashion, meaning that knowing that you can have a couture yarn and you can make a couture garment, but it comes from a farm. I mean, I do it all the time. And I think that's really amazing when someone looks at a garment and they ask me, where'd you get it? And I said, well, I got it from a farmer. They look at you, really? It came from a farmer? I say, yeah, it really came from a farmer. I mean, some of the best alpacas that just feel so yummy in your hands and next to your skin. It's just great. So, and Angora Bunny, where, you know, you can hand spin it and it can have the guard hair on it, which most people don't know what that is, that it can create such a wonderful furry sort of trim that it's beautiful. So that's just what I think. But it's the trends are towards that. I mean, it's very new still. The whole farm to fashion sort of tag has only really been around since 2009 because Vogue magazine did, and they've been doing it every season now, where you'll see a farm to fashion sort of editorial. And the first one that I saw, because I've been paying attention to it for a really long time, 2009 was the first sort of big splash that Vogue did. And they did a whole photo shoot up at a farm in Vermont. But of course, it was with high-end fashion and that kind of thing. But it was definitely connecting the fashion to the farm.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Prior to having children, and even currently now, been in the graphic design, branding, and product development business for 30 years, and have worked on everything from food to all kinds of wine packaging. I've done some international packaging, and it has made my brand of Nuna Knits really very easy to develop. So that branding and marketing knowledge and experience has helped in naming it and figuring out the whole farm to fashion approach and really staying true to that brand, because that's the only way it will grow.
You've actually done that kind of development, graphics like logo development, so on, for a couple of farmers. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yes. Actually, just finished two. One for sheep shearer in the Mid-Atlantic states, and he is a sheep shearer and an international acclaimed professional. And met him this in 2011 doing my certification as a wool classer through the American sheep industry. And he asked me to develop his logo and also to develop the knitting gauges for his yarns. And they're mostly shepherd type breeds of Romney, Jacob, and Border Leicester, and in natural colors of gray and like a bark color. So develop those. And then also a fine breeder of Saxon Merino, same way, and developing their graphics and branding and their gauges for them directly. So those were just completed about a month ago.
Thank you again. Thank you very much. I'm really happy to have done this.
Thanks so much, Hazel. I really appreciate it. If any of your listeners would like to contact me, my email address is Nuna, N-U-N-A, Knits, K-N-I-T-S, at gmail.com. And I can't thank you enough for this wonderful opportunity. Thank you again.
Peggy Ehlers has been telling us about how she takes wool from the farmer and transforms it into yarns and fashions for us to use. You can meet Peggy and her spinning wheel at the White Weathered Barn in Greenport, New York. This is North Fork Works on WPKN 89.5 FM Bridgeport, streaming on WPKN.org and archived on hazelkahn.com and WPKN.org. You can meet another of my North Fork neighbors on WPKN on the second Wednesday of each month at 7:30 p.m. North Fork Works is produced by Tony Ernst. This is Hazel Kahn.